welcome to the Novel Ideas Podcast.
The Novel Ideas Podcast, a podcast with two siblings who love books.
Yeah, I'm actually completely surrounded in a fortress of books because winter is coming and I have to be prepared.
I'm sitting on a throne made of books because I won the Game of Thrones!
Are they spiky books that stab you?
Some of them are, yes.
Which books are spiky?
You know, the Book of Spikes.
The book about porcupines.
Porcupine book. For some reason, it's a pop-up. Little kid's porcupine book.
The children's Vlad the Impaler book.
Yes.
Spikes.
You open it up and there are little spears sticking out with like a little twitching paper guy on it.
Yeah. Hooray. It's actually kind of relevant, too, to stuff that happens in the book.
It is a little bit, actually.
So, I'm Gebs.
I'm Ben.
And this week we are talking about Game of Thrones.
By George R.R. Martin.
Or here.
Gurm, as we affectionately refer to
him.
Yeah,
here on out, referred to as Gurm. And if you haven't heard of Game of Thrones, I don't really know how you did that.
Yeah, what rock are you living underneath? Like, everybody's heard of it. If you haven't seen it, haven't read it, hey, no big deal. Not all of you have HBO. Not all of you can read. Well, actually, you're listening to this podcast. All of you probably can read. But, come on, you've all heard of it. You have some concept of what it is.
Yeah, it was actually, that was another thing that soured my visit to the eye doctor the other day, was he said, oh, what are you reading? I said, Game of Thrones. And he's like, what's that about? And I said, have you heard of it at all? He's like, no. I was like,
all right.
What?
The only way that is possible is to have no contact with the internet for, like, the last year and a half.
Yeah, because actually when I started reading the books, I was surprised if people hadn't heard of Game of Thrones. And now that there's a television series, it's basically impossible not to. So, yeah, that's what we're discussing. If you have not read it, and you do not like spoilers, this is actually a book where our spoiler policy is extremely relevant.
Yes, so if you're a person who hates spoilers, get out now.
Yeah.
Because we will talk about everything, and we're going to do it really soon. So seriously, if it's going to bother you, turn it off.
Yeah, Ben's about to ruin everything.
Because I'm about to tell you that Ned Stark dies. Oh, and now I just ruined someone's shit.
Yeah, someone's like screaming and throwing their iPod across the room. And
not Ned Stark!
Why?
That's my dog.
That's my dog, man. Yeah, although the second you saw that Sean Bean was cast as Ned Stark, any movie savvy people went, oh shit. It's fucking doomed.
He's gonna die.
Because that's what Sean Bean does.
That's what he does best.
He's like Bill Paxton, but British.
Yeah, there you go.
And he's in better stuff. Kind of. Yeah, typically.
We can debate that sometime.
Yeah, well, that's a conversation for another place.
In September, when we start our Who's Better, Sean Bean or Bill Paxton podcast. Tune in for that.
A weekly podcast.
So we just debate which one of them is better.
For a year.
For a
52
whole,
episodes.
52 episodes. We'll take a week off, like, for Christmas.
Yeah.
51 episodes.
We have enough movies and TV shows, we could maybe pull it off. It'd be like 10 minutes long. An hour long Sean Bean Bill Paxton podcast.
That is a lot of hours for one concept joke.
Also, that's a very niche audience.
I feel like we could pull everyone in.
Who the fuck cares about that? Just talk about Tombstone for 30 episodes straight.
I'm in.
All right.
I could do that.
So, yeah, I mean, we've already alluded to why we chose the book. Freaking everyone knows about the series.
Yeah, I mean, it was a really popular series in the fantasy genre to begin with. And HBO miniseries really propelled it, and sales have skyrocketed because of it. And all three books are, they're not at the top of the...
All three?
Yeah.
They're five.
Did I say three?
Yeah.
All five are hanging around the New York Times bestseller list. They're not towards the top of it, 50 Shades of Grey. But they're on there. I think three of them are in the top 30 or whatever they put online. Yeah,
and I think, I mean, when Dance with Dragons, the fifth one, came out, it was at the top for a while. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they're really popular. We're obviously still doing our bestseller kick. So that's also the relevance there. So let's get started with this show.
All right.
So Ben, you already gave away the genre. You said it's popular in the fantasy world.
Yes, it is fantasy. It is your standard swords and sorcery type of fantasy.
Kind of.
There is maybe a little less of the sorcery and a little more of the swords.
Especially in book one.
Yeah. The magical elements are there. There are not wizards who walk around casting spells at things, but there are supernatural elements, creatures mostly, and a little bit of magic, but it's not the fireball type of magic.
The human beings in the book overall are not doing magic, except for the kind of freaky ones that you never really get to know.
Yeah, at least not in the first book.
Yeah, definitely. And that's what makes it kind of interesting is the first time Ben and I had a discussion of this book, we were saying, oh, there's pretty much no magical fantasy element in the book. But the book opening is actually a magical element, and then the book ending is also a magical element.
But just about everything in between is intrigue, political machinations.
Yeah, it's like first 5 pages, last 5 pages, and then the middle, like, 700 pages are just people doing stuff.
I've also heard this book referred to as low fantasy, and as a description, not as an insult. And I'm actually not quite clear on the difference between high fantasy and low fantasy, but I think it has something to do with the presence of elves versus people who are willing to say cunt. I think that's the difference.
Well, Frodo never said that.
Yeah, and there are elves.
In Lord of the Rings, it's high fantasy.
And there you go.
So there.
That's what I base my conclusions off of.
If Sauron is not in it, it doesn't count.
Though in the movie, the Eye of Sauron did look a little like a cunt.
Oh, God. Starting this fall, movie villains that look like body parts. Starting with Sauron, moving on to Bane and the Goatsy Mask. Our plot synopsis for the book is... there are many different ways you could describe this book, but I honestly think there's really just one sentence that kind of encapsulates the entire thing.
We'll throw it out there.
Winter is coming.
Winter is coming.
Winter is coming. If you, like, post anything on Facebook or Twitter that you're reading Game of Thrones, if one of your friends doesn't respond, winter is coming, then your friends suck. Like, that's the response.
Yeah.
Like, I just watched Game of Thrones! And then someone's like, winter is coming.
I mean, it's kind of almost the theme of the whole series. That, like, everything is just declining right now.
Yeah. Kind of a metaphor, as well as the literal winter is coming. We should mention that this story takes place in a world where winter and summer lasts for more than, like, a season.
Yeah, like, you can have 7 years of summer. They've been in 9 years of summer, uh-huh. I think, at this book, yeah. And so that usually means a long winter is approaching. And apparently, when winter hits, if you live in the north, you won't see the sun for possibly years.
Yeah.
And all of the magical beasties that are really scary get a hell of a lot stronger, too.
Uh-huh. Yeah, one of the things I actually thought was kind of hilarious about this book is they're talking about winter is coming and it's late summer, and they're talking about the late summer snows. Late summer snows are really deep this year. They're like 3 feet. And I was like, that is like middle of the winter blizzard for us. And they're just like, yeah. It's...
summer at Winterfell sucks. Don't bring your swimsuit.
Yeah. And if you go to the wall, just fucking forget it. Because you're just fucked.
Just stick your balls in the freezer every day and prepare yourself.
Interesting visual there. But the name of the kingdom where most of this takes place is Westeros.
Yes, home of the Seven Kingdoms. Called Westeros because I guess it's west of the east.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of how it's described.
Yeah, it's pretty vague.
Yeah, and we don't know what's west of Westeros. In fact, I don't think anybody does.
Yeah, actually, like, because Westeros is essentially a big old island. Yeah, or continent.
It's like a really narrow continent. It's a big, long strip.
It's kind of like England, but...
a really elongated one.
Yeah, because they're able to build the wall across the neck, and that reminded me of the Romans and Hadrian's Wall, being right. able to actually build a wall from coast to coast, which is only possible if you have a pretty narrow stretch.
Though this is a 700-foot-tall wall in the book, so...
Holy shit, dude.
Yeah, the people who built it might not have needed as narrow a landmass as Hadrian did.
That, like... I'm, like, 700 feet tall. That is really goddamn tall.
I wonder how much magic existed with the first men and, you know, back in ancient times, according to this book. Like, Brandon the Builder didn't just have dudes hauling ice all over the continent, did he?
I think ancient aliens came down.
Oh, of course.
Just like they helped the Egyptians.
Tomorrow on History, how aliens helped Brandon the Builder...
make the wall 700 feet tall. I love Ancient Aliens, but I fucking hate it too.
You hate that?
Because people actually believe it.
Right.
I'm like, I laugh, and then I go, people actually believe this. Oh no. I'm just depressed. But that's... we're totally...
perhaps we're going astray.
So one of the features of this book is the fact that it doesn't just follow one person's point of view around.
Yeah, I mean, it shifts regularly. Every chapter is told from the perspective of a different character. And usually, not two chapters in a row from two characters in the same place.
Yeah. You'll get, like, Bran. His thing will end on some kind of something. Then you'll go to Catelyn running around. You'll get a little bit of Daenerys. And then you go to King's Landing and get some Arya. And then, yeah. He definitely hops around a lot, and, I mean, this sort of format definitely allows you to leave cliffhangers in one storyline and then go into a new storyline. So, you know, if you're interested in what Daenerys is doing, and then you start the next chapter and you're like, oh, fuck, and you have to read, like, four or five chapters to get back to her.
You're going
to
be in there for a while to get back.
Yeah.
But that being said, he mostly doesn't cliffhang at the end of chapters. I mean, you'll kind of want to know what's going on because you can only develop so much of all these intricate plots in one chapter, but it's not like, oh, here's a major event with no conclusion. He's like, here's a major event, here's the direct consequences of said event, but now you're wondering what the next crazy event's going to be.
Yeah, it's usually not typical cliffhanger, with the exception of Bran getting thrown out of window.
Yes.
Which is... like, the definition of cliffhanger.
Right, it's a literal cliffhanger.
But, yeah, most of the rest of them are not actual, you know, is this gonna happen? And then you have to wait four chapters. It's more like, this crazy shit's going on, and you're like, oh, I want to know more about that.
Yeah, and well, that's in part because he's so willing to go to a crazy place. And, I mean, if you've read more than just the first book, which... both of us have. We won't spoil anything outside of this first book, but there are moments in this one too. But he'll just like he'll kill people to drop the hat. Gurm gives no fucks. Yeah. Who your favorite character is?
If you get into Game of Thrones, one of Gurm's trademarks is that he will take you to the place where a daring author might take you that makes you go, oh shit, and then he'll just like. Laugh at that moment and do something like 100 times worse, like in the next paragraph, and you're like, oh my god! And this book really is kind of a warm-up. The fact that Ned Stark dies at the end really is like the oh shit moment of the book, where people kind of realized, uh-oh, like maybe no one is safe. And then in later books you discover, oh, that is literally true.
Yeah, Ned Stark's death is maybe the second biggest holy shit moment in the series.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I don't think I've ever read an author more willing to kill off characters and do horrible shit to them than Gurm.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when I was reading the fourth and fifth books, especially, I was really uneasy sometimes. It's like, no, they're not going to kill that guy, right?
Yeah, because you're so used to it.
Right.
And I mean, I guess that's one of the reasons he doesn't really do the cliffhangers, as I was kind of thinking one of the purposes of cliffhangers is to make you go, oh shit, what's going to happen? And then usually the next chapter starts and it's like, oh, it's okay.
Yeah, his preference is to make the shit happen and then let you deal with it.
Right, so whereas normally you might get a cliffhanger of like, then I saw the gun in my face. And then in the next chapter, he'd be like, I shoved the gun aside and ran. he'd be like, so-and-so got shot directly in the face and died. Bye, see you in 50 pages.
You're like, wait a minute, character had a name and a backstory. You can't just do that.
What the fuck is happening? Yeah, that's fairly common. So, I mean, there are no guns. That was just a hypothetical, by the way. So let's get into some of the characters.
Sure. Well, let's start with Ned Stark, since we said his name a lot.
Eddard.
Or Ned.
Almost Edward, but
not.
Not. some of the names in this book are almost like names you know, but then not.
I actually read Rickard Karstark as Richard all the way through him not being in the books anymore.
Nice.
And then when I was rereading this time, I was like, oh, that's Rickard, not Richard. Oops.
I read Caitlin and Lisa until I saw the show, and then I was like, Catelyn and Lysa, what the fuck?
Gurm!
Like, seriously.
But Ned is, well, he's almost the closest thing you have to a standard heroic character. Like, he's your honorable man.
Yeah, I mean, Ned's whole thing is honor.
And he's, and again, I've seen this before in certain types of heroic characters. He's honorable to the point of self-inflicted injury.
Yes, he will do the honorable thing even if it's detrimental to him.
Yeah, I mean, he really, that's why it's a big moment. Part of the reason his death is so shocking is that he actually, arguably, compromises his honor.
Uh-huh.
Though you could argue he was maintaining it in a way too, but he did something that he basically lied. He cops to a crime to protect his family.
Mm-hmm.
Which is honorable, though I don't know that the Westerosi necessarily would have considered that the most honorable course, like just letting them kill him maybe.
Right.
So he compromises himself finally for the first time that anybody's even heard of him doing that.
Uh-huh.
And then off with his head anyway, because that was supposed to save his life.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and it should have saved his life.
Right, but Joffrey's a dick.
Because, yeah, I mean, there's what Ben was saying about that's one of the reasons it's a shocker. Another reason it's a shocker is because he is kind of the typical fantasy hero type. You expect him to be one of the main characters. Like, those are the main characters we're used to reading.
Right, well, and plus he's the honorable man in the middle of all the backstabbing at the Capitol. Like, he's the Mr. Smith, kind of.
Yeah, yeah, and then the other thing is that moment where he dies makes you realize, oh, shit, like, Joffrey is not just, like, a little shit. Like, he's legitimately a horrible person who's gonna start fucking people over.
Oh, he's an insane teenage emperor. I got it.
Yeah, because at first, I mean, you pretty much hate him from the get-go.
Oh, he does, yeah. Gurm does everything in his power to make you want to punch Joffrey in the face.
Yeah, I mean, he's a little douchebag from the beginning. But that's the first moment where you're like, oh, now he's a douchebag and he has the power to carry out his douchebaggery.
Yep. And he gives no shits because he's the king, so he can do whatever he wants, according to him.
And even his mother starts to regret that.
Yep. Well, it's kind of hard to feel sorry for, honestly.
Yeah. The other thing that makes Ned so likable, I think, is that he's not just like, honor, honor, honor. He also legitimately loves his family.
Oh, yeah, there are probably 8 or 9 Father of the Year moments in the book. Like, every time the daughter, because both of his daughters are rather overwrought, though for very different reasons. Uh-huh. But they've made this long move and they're in weird, unfamiliar circumstances and they're kind of opposite of each other, and he's always having to sit down with one or the other and go, look.
This is how you do this.
This is how things have to work. But while kind of laying down the law, like, he has these really warm moments with both daughters, and you're just like, ah, good old Ned.
Yeah, and one of the other things that makes him special, I think, is that he does have legitimately warm moments with his daughters.
Yes.
Where I think most of the men in the book, in these books, would just be like, whatever.
You're not a son.
That's my daughter.
Right.
Fuck you.
He's also one of those very silly nobles who actually loves his wife.
Yeah.
What a silly man.
What an idiot. And Catelyn, yeah, they're in a loving marriage of equals.
Yeah, it's kind of... It's the family setup for the nobles in this universe is almost kind of odd because the... You know, the Lannisters will go out on a limb for a family member as quickly as the Starks will. Just their motivations for doing so are very, very different.
That's true, because the Lannisters are also hell or high water to get their family back.
Right, because the Starks are, oh, they arrested Ned, well, let's call the Banners and go to war. Whereas the Lannisters are more, oh, their Tywin is, oh, they captured my dwarf son that I don't even want. Well... You can't just raise your middle finger at House Lannister and expect me not to cut it off.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's... The Lannisters are kind of awesome.
Yeah, they... Yeah, Tywin Lannister is definitely what you would term a magnificent bastard.
Yeah, he totally is.
Because he's so cold and so manipulative, but, like, just awesomely so. And not in the sense of... That's really cool that people like use, but you're actually just in awe of it.
Yeah, and again, the Lannisters, like, a lot of them are dicks, but Joffrey's the only one who's, like, douchey beyond reason. You know, Tywin is a bastard, but he knows it, and he's doing everything for a reason. He's not going to go out and be a dick just for the sake of being a dick.
Yeah, so when we talked about Divergent, we talked about villains and how some of them in that book didn't have great motivations and how people, like in real life, people aren't evil just for the sake of being evil. Like, they have reasons for it. Usually they don't consider what they're doing to be particularly evil. Though if you're an insane teenage emperor, you might just be really self-absorbed and it's hard to find any motivation other than that. But the villains in this book... have good motivations. I mean, they have political goals or personal goals, or they're upholding their family's honor and just like reasons that you could see people actually having to do bad things.
There are very, very few characters in these books as a whole that are just like straight up evil.
Right. Well, I mean, in this particular universe too, just the nature of it is that there's a lot of gray area. You know, the good guys have people's heads removed and put on spikes as a warning to their enemies.
Uh-huh.
So when the bad guys do it, like, that in and of itself is not an evil thing. And as a 21st century person, it's hard to think that way sometimes.
That is one of the things I was going to say, is that even the good characters that, you know, you like and root for... don't always do good things, and the ones who are really, really good, like, Ned's basically just too good for the world and has to get killed for it, because he can't turn himself more gray, basically, I guess is the way I'd say it.
Yeah, he will not compromise himself, and, like, you have to survive, really.
Uh-huh.
At least you do, I mean, in the North, where he's the lord of everything... he can afford to be uncompromising like that. In the South, where everybody is preparing to stick a dagger in everyone else's back, you just can't do that.
Yep.
Game of Thrones! Win or die.
Just yell Game of Thrones randomly throughout to get the point across.
There you go.
Game of Thrones!
Game of Thrones!
We're going to talk a little bit about the rest of the Starks.
Yeah, let's run down the list.
I do think it's kind of funny that when I was thinking of how I wanted to talk about the Starks, I immediately listed the three women first and basically ignored the boys.
That is kind of funny. I mean, it's most authors, especially male authors, that wouldn't
as
happen.
As discussed.
The deeper you get into the series, the more you see of the boys. But the two oldest you get some scenes with. I mean, Rob becomes a battle commander of a huge army. A pretty good one, in fact.
Even though he's only 15.
But there's not a lot of depth to the character after the first book. And you get to see a little more of Jon Snow.
Jon definitely develops.
Yeah.
Later.
But
not in this book, Jon's pretty, eh.
Yeah, I mean, he goes to the Wall and he starts developing some leadership qualities. He definitely has a like mini cult of personality with the recruits his age, if nothing else. And he's the one who reaches out to Sam.
And I don't like Sam.
And Sam's pretty likable. He's smart, but Gurm really goes out of his way to make him seem like a pathetic figure.
He really does. And I was like, yeah, I like Sam. And then it's like, but he's fat and weak.
He's a fat coward. And he makes sure to use the word coward, craven, or fat basically every time Sam's name is in a sentence.
Yeah.
One of those three words is in the same sentence.
Yeah, apparently Sam is like the fattest person ever. It's ridiculous.
It is pretty ridiculous. You'd think being on the Wall and being on presumably shorter rations most of the
time. And having to go out and do stuff would...
I think he'd start to round into shape at some point, but no. It's always his many chins or his enormous belly or his whatever.
Yep.
But I digress. And then I'm going to skip over the girls for just a moment here. And the two young sons, Bran, who you spend a little time with because he's developing this whole, like, third eye, see special sight thing.
Yeah.
But again, not really in detail yet. It's more hinted at. And then Rickon, the little one, who's a four-year-old, and so...
gets no page time.
That's his character.
And nobody cares.
Rickon's a four-year-old.
Yeah. Nobody cares. Turn to the nearest four-year-old you know, and that's Rickon.
Right.
Just obnoxious.
The thing, like, there's a Louis C.K. bit, I think, that's titled My Three-Year-Old is Three, or something along those lines. And that's Rickon for you, more
yeah,
or less.
Yeah,
yeah. But the girls you actually get to spend more time with.
Uh-huh.
And so... Sansa is the older.
She's 11, I think, at the outset.
She is, I think. That sounds right.
And one of the things I wanted to mention here is that, I mean, I haven't spent a lot of time on the internet fandom, mostly because I've heard it's full of neckbeards, and I just kind of want to stay away from that. But apparently there's a whole bunch of people who hate Sansa, like, a lot, and Catelyn, for that matter, like hate them. Which I don't get. But the Sansa thing really doesn't make sense to me unless you, like, only read her first chapter and then ignore the rest of her character development.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you watched the first, what, approximately 7 or 8 episodes of the first season on HBO, and you hated Sansa, then I could understand your argument. But... once her father is killed, life just becomes a giant shit sandwich for that girl. Like, I just feel sorry for her most of the time.
I mean, the main thing you have to keep in mind is she's 11. She's never, like, seen political intrigue or bad people. She's been raised on all these, you know, romantic songs and tales of knights and shit. And she's just totally stuck on that. I mean, it's kind of like... you know, if you want to equate it to, like, a modern-day girl being obsessed with, like, Disney princesses or something. It's kind of that parallel. Like,
yeah.
I'm going to go find my perfect man, and he's going to be adventurous, and I'm going to be a lady.
Well, Sansa's storyline for this book, and for the series as a whole, even, is basically just her gradual disillusionment.
Yeah, is she starts out as a naive 11-year-old, and then starts realizing, oh, that's not the way the world works.
Yeah, and I mean, just rude awakenings constantly. Even before Ned Stark is arrested and eventually executed, like her encounter with the Hound, where he tells his story that apparently he's never told to anyone before, so Maybe she has her own little cult of personality going. It's just weird. Their relationship has always been fascinating to me.
Oh, Sansa and the Hound.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he unloads this story on her, which makes him seem slightly sympathetic, and she's really conflicted because he's so terrifying, but has appeared vulnerable for a second, and then basically as soon as he finishes saying the story, he says, looks her in the eyes and tells this little girl, if you ever tell anyone, she's like, well, of course I won't tell anyone. No, if you ever tell anyone, I will kill you. That's really heavy for like an 11 or 12 year old.
And that's a guy who would actually kill her.
Yeah, this is a guy who that is totally believable from too. That's not, that is not an idle threat. That is a promise.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, again, this is before the intrigue even explodes. And then once it does, she's just in such a bad situation. And I actually think that probably part of what some people would find unlikable is that she always puts on this ladylike show.
Uh-huh.
And in the book, it's all, it's really obvious that it's a show.
Uh-huh.
I mean, for my money, on HBO, I thought it was pretty obvious, too. I thought the actress did a good job. But, like, she wears her manners like it, like armor.
Yeah. What's all she has?
Yeah. Or like a life preserver, maybe.
Because if she just flips a shit in the middle of court constantly, like, that's gonna do something bad to her. And, I mean, you know, her dad's dead. Her septa's dead. Her maids are gone. Like,
probably dead.
Yeah. So she doesn't know what to do. I mean, the only thing she can do is try to shield herself with her manners and make it through.
Yeah, again, I spend most of my time feeling sorry for her, especially at, once the first book is over, like the rest of the series, I spend all of the time with her feeling sorry for her. She's just a very sympathetic figure as it goes along. Now, Catelyn, we'll get to Arya in a second here, but as long as I'm talking about people that fandom, some parts of fandom at least don't seem to like, I have more trouble understanding why the first time we ever talked about this book, Gabs told me that some people didn't like her, and I said, why? Like, I couldn't think of a reason to dislike
her. As far as I understand it, the first reason is she's mean to Jon Snow.
Oh, okay.
Which people are like, oh, I love Jon Snow.
That is true. People do love Jon Snow.
And some people blame her for causing the entire war by kidnapping Tyrion.
I think it was probably not a good decision to kidnap Tyrion. But according to the evidence she had, he tried to have her son killed.
And some, like, other people make stupid decisions in this book.
Right.
Like, she's not the reason.
I mean, I didn't think that she probably should have kidnapped Tyrion, especially after the shit show that happens at the Eyrie.
Yeah. God. She didn't know her sister turned so bad.
Yeah, she didn't know her sister had gone bonkers. But again, like, you can see her motivations for it. It makes sense. And if someone, if you thought that you were looking at the person who attempted to murder your son, then just having him taken prisoner might actually be a sign of restraint on her part, frankly.
Yeah, actually.
Not just jumping on him and squeezing his neck until his eyes popped out of his head.
Which she could have done.
Which she could have done, and in this book would have been described in graphic detail.
And the world would have missed out on some more Tyrion.
Because he's everybody's favorite character.
That's
except,
not true.
Except for the people who Arya is their favorite character.
I think I heard that Tyrion was Gurm's favorite character.
He does get all the best lines, so that makes sense to me.
But, yeah. Mm-hmm. But Catelyn is actually, she's not just, like, you know, housewife. She's a strong woman, but being strong in ways that are, like, smart. You know?
Right, yeah.
Not in ways, she's not typical, I'm going to make a strong female character by making her physically strong.
Right. Well, I mean, plus, if you're Lady Stark, then, like, your housewife duties are things like keeping track of finances for a castle.
Yeah.
It's stuff where you need to be pretty together.
Uh-huh.
It's you're not changing diapers. You're a lady. You're a noble.
She's making all these political maneuvers.
Yeah, she helps Rob execute the war to some degree. She lets him make the decisions, but she gently guides him into making good decisions at times.
And it's mentioned multiple times that, like, her presence and her knowledge of other nobles helps stuff move along, because, oh, we've seen her around, we know who she is, we're gonna take her more seriously.
Right. And so, yeah, I mean, she's a... she's an important figure, and she knows how to operate in a political environment.
Yeah.
So maybe I liked her because I thought she was smart. I tend to like smart characters.
Yeah, I think Catelyn's cool. I don't get it. She's like one of my faves.
And so, yeah, I guess that leaves Arya among the Starks.
Yep.
And she's the tomboy. Everybody always loves the tomboy character.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. She's the skinny little 9-year-old who plays with a sword and runs around being quirky all the time.
Yeah.
So, pretty hard not to like that kind of character.
Yeah, that's very true. Someone who hates needlework and wearing dresses. Like, I think a lot of people can get on board with that.
Right. I don't think there are a lot of people... I don't meet very many young ladies who are into doing needlework and wearing dresses. Though most of them don't have a problem with wearing dresses.
Yeah, but if you were forced to wear dresses all the time... Like, I'll wear a dress on a special occasion, but if someone was trying to make me wear one every day, I'd be like, fuck you!
Yeah.
Just like Art. Well, not just like Art,
right.
But...
I want to wear pants and ride a horse instead of riding in the wagon in a gown. Like,
yeah. I just... The image of Arya in a dress kind of cracks me up. Like, I can't really imagine her in one.
Oh, yeah. And does she ever wear one?
Yeah. Well, at the beginning, I think. She has to wear one.
When the king visits.
Yeah.
That's probably the only time.
Yeah.
And it was probably had dirt on it.
Yeah. Probably was like a friggin' mess.
He's one of those characters, too. Dirt just seems to be attracted to her. And she just, like, shows up randomly sometimes in other characters' chapters.
Yeah.
They come around a corner, and there she is, standing on one foot on the stairs. What are you doing?
Water dancers can balance on one toe.
Oh, all right, carry on.
Have fun with that.
She's kind of a spaz sometimes.
I'm catching cats.
That's right, catching cats.
She has elements of Bryony in her.
Yeah, times. I think so, a little bit.
Well, she is a fiery young girl.
And, well, her life kind of goes shit show, too, after everything goes down. But in a very different way from Sansa.
Yeah.
Much more of that in the later books, I guess.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Tyrion.
Okay.
He's been mentioned more than once.
Tyrion.
So.
The dwarf.
Yes.
Played by Peter Dinklage in your brain.
Yeah, once you've seen the miniseries, if you can picture Tyrion as anyone else, then...
You're magical.
Yeah, I guess you're a better or worse man than I. One of those. I don't know which one. But he gets all the best lines. Part of the reason he's so likable. He's a dwarf, and not only is he a dwarf, he's an ugly dwarf.
Yeah.
And not only is he an ugly dwarf, like, he's an ugly dwarf who is probably physically in worse condition than a lot of dwarves.
Uh-huh.
But, like, he's such a smartass, and it's hard not to like the smartass character, and he's smart, and he manipulates his environment... Because he's always been on the lowest rung of the ladder, so he's just learned how to judge people and how to get them to do things, whether it's through coercion or the carrot or the stick, I think is the phrase I'm looking for.
And one of the things I think is really likable about Tyrion is he doesn't have any of that self-crisis identity stuff going on. He's just like, yes... I'm a dwarf. I know I'm ugly. I know you all look down on me. And then he uses that to his best advantage. He totally accepts who he is. And is like... I mean, one of the things I think is cool about his character is I don't think you see a lot of handicapped characters or disabled, I don't remember the proper term, sorry. But you don't see a lot of those characters in books. And the fact that he's in the book and is one of the main characters, and, like, other people look down on him, but it's actually, you know, never really a bad thing, because he actually uses it to his advantage as a total badass. Right. I think that's really cool. And that was one of the things I thought was really cool for the miniseries, was that Peter Dinklage, the actor who plays him, has been in Hollywood for a long time. And a lot of people have kind of seen him around in the little dwarf characters and movies and stuff. But here he actually gets to be a main character with a real role.
Right.
And he's fucking awesome at it.
Well, I think that self-confidence is where that mouthiness comes from, too.
Uh-huh.
Well, and also the having been overlooked, so to speak. I know, the combination of the two things. But, yeah. People say, oh, there's the dwarf. And he's like, I can say whatever I want, because I give no shits.
Yeah. And he makes, I mean, the comments he makes to John and Bran are both great, you know?
Right.
Don't call me a bastard. And he's like, come on.
You're a bastard, just like I'm a dwarf.
Yeah. Or when Bran says, I'm not a cripple.
Oh, then I'm not a dwarf.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, I am. And guess what?
You're a cripple. So shut up.
Dealing with your problem is better than denying your problem.
Yeah.
You will be happier and you will accomplish many more things. Other Lannisters?
The Lannisters, yeah. Jaime and Cersei?
Yes. Incest alert!
Oh, God. This is actually probably the first big plot point in the book, is when you learn about the incest.
Yeah, so those children of the kings are actually not the king's children. They're the queen and her brother's children.
Her twin brother.
Her twin brother. Does that make it more okay or less okay?
That makes it way grosser.
It makes it weirder.
Maybe that's why Joffrey's so fucked up.
Yeah, maybe.
Because he's a weird product of incest.
That's what being an incest baby actually does to you.
Just makes you fucked up.
Makes you a dick.
Yeah, that first moment where Bran's, you know, listening to them talk, and then you're like, oh my god, that's Cersei and Jaime having sex, blah!
Why'd you do that?
And then, you know, later it becomes less horrifying because it happens so much, you just kind of get used to it.
That's true.
But
there are, it's pointed out that in the first two books there are, like, three incest plot lines.
Good lord.
Yeah.
There is a fair amount of incest happening in these books. But the incest between them is especially dangerous. I don't remember if I've talked about this in the past or not, but in the Renaissance, the reason the queen cheating on the king was such a big deal, and the reason, and it wasn't a big deal vice versa, I mean, there's the sexism element, but also, if the queen sleeps with someone else and gets pregnant by that other guy, and then passes that kid off as the king's kid, then you're basically usurping the throne and putting a non-true heir on the throne.
And usurping the throne isn't the sort of thing you do if you plan to live very long.
Uh-huh. Whereas if the king cheats on the queen, he's just having bastard children, and it's not that big of a deal.
Yep, and as long as his pure-born, whatever the term you'd use would be, children are okay, then you don't have to worry about those bastards, because they don't have a claim to the throne. Though, if your kingdom gets involved in a nasty civil war, then that can get unpleasant in a hurry.
Yeah, and I think Louis the 14th actually ended up legitimizing some of his bastards, because he was having some issues with living too long and everyone dying. Right. But as it turns out, that's exactly what's going on. Cersei's children are all her brothers, and therefore don't technically deserve to be on the throne.
Yes, her son/nephew isn't supposed to be king.
Bah. Ew, when you put it that way, it's like disgusting.
It makes it even worse. If someone would just punch him in the face.
And I actually have some amount of sympathy for Cersei. Again, she's not just, like, a total bitch. She wants her kids on the throne, but, like, she does realize that Joffrey's a dick. She's not just, like, you know, blind to it. she apparently has an emotional connection to her brother, which is still gross, but, I mean, Robert's kind of a shitty husband.
Yeah, he was a really shitty husband, actually. I mean, he's... I guess the central conflict in the marriage comes down to he's still carrying a torch for the girl he was actually supposed to marry, which led to the whole war that led to him becoming king of this kingdom.
Yeah.
That's a fairly major event, I would say.
And it happened 15 years ago, and he's still hung up on it.
Yeah, and so she knows that she's never been number one, and he doesn't really go out of his way to put on some kind of show that maybe she is. And, you know, it's one of those cases where pretending a little bit would actually make the marriage a lot better.
Uh-huh.
And he's just... He's not much of a family man. He's a bachelor, especially for this universe. He's like a full on definition of what their bachelors are supposed to be.
Yeah,
like drinking, whoring, fighting,
hunting. Yeah,
there you go.
That's all he wants to do.
And Cersei's motivations are very understandable. We were talking earlier about villains and motivations. Her villainous moments come out of a desire to protect her children, primarily.
Uh-huh.
There's a little bit of power-seeking there, but mostly because it's her kids who are going to be in power, and therefore she wants to secure power.
Uh-huh.
So, that's totally understandable. That was in the conversation with Ned Stark, right? Where she said that she loves her children as much as he loves his children.
Uh-huh.
So, hey, we all know what happens when you piss off a mom.
Yeah.
Mama Bear will tear your head off.
And yeah, she legitimately loves her children. That is a point in her favor, for sure.
Let's go east.
Daenerys.
Daenerys, Drogo, and Viserys to some degree.
Yeah.
Though he's mostly there because... they need someone...
so you can watch him die.
...that you want to punch in the face.
God.
And unlike Joffrey, you get to see Viserys die horribly.
Yeah, it's awesome. Daenerys, I don't know how I missed it the first time around, or maybe I just put it out of my head or something. I totally forgot that she was 13 when this whole thing starts.
Yeah, so if you watched the miniseries and didn't read the book, yeah, they aged that character a few years. And... thank you, by the way.
Oh my god. I do not want to see a 13-year-old actress getting pregnant. Thank you very much.
Yeah, don't need that.
Yeah, she's 13, gets pregnant at 14, and it's, if you think about it in a modern sense, it's really creepy. It was hanging me up pretty bad this time around, even though the first time I apparently just went, well, whatever. She's like 16, right? Whatever. Just keep going. Not a big deal.
Well, it really only meant her age only gets mentioned twice, like once in her opening scene, and then it's mentioned when they discover she's pregnant. It is on her 14th name day.
Yeah.
I mean, you're in a universe, in a political setting, where girls get married as soon as they start having their period, basically.
Yep.
That makes you eligible, because once you're having that, you can give birth.
Yeah.
And, well, that's... really an important function of a political marriage is to generate an heir.
It's true.
So, there you go. Yeah, with Daenerys, I guess we're gonna bleed over into our issues section for just a moment here.
That's fine.
But it's hard not to.
Yeah.
Probably as far as moral gray area goes in this book, the part that makes me most uncomfortable is Daenerys' plot line. Because there's a little bit of the rape becomes love.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's a full-fledged trope or not, but it's definitely, like, a thing that's out there. And, well, it's just a thing that I can't really buy into.
Because it is, like, at the beginning, you know, she's crying into her pillow and...
yeah, I mean, Gurm really goes out of his way for their initial sexual encounter for him to be way more understanding about it than you actually expected him to be. And so, like, but then after that, he doesn't show tenderness again until she decides that she's just going to go ahead and live with this situation. And so there are at least a few months of disturbing, rapey
13-year-old girl.
Yeah.
Married. Ugh.
Yeah, and I mean, it eventually turns itself around, but it seems odd. I just feel like she should probably be too psychologically damaged to be able to function as well as she does by then.
Yeah. But she does, and she ends up being happy with Khal Drogo.
That's true, and you know, maybe it's part of the Targaryen thing, where they're apparently either badass conquerors or insane assholes, and she just must be
the badass conqueror type.
As tough as they come, I guess.
Yeah.
Maybe that's part of why we're supposed to think that. And then, I don't know, there's not really a whole lot to say about the other two, I guess. Like we said, Viserys is an asshole and dies in one of the most horrible ways I could imagine.
And it's awesome.
And it is kind of awesome. And then Drogo is pretty much your standard warrior type. Actually, yeah. I kind of think that the Dothraki are supposed to be like Attila's Huns, pretty much.
I was thinking like kind of Mongolian...
Yeah.
Tradition.
Well, it's the horseback. It was the bow-based attacks on horseback that made me think Huns, I guess. But I guess the
migrating Mongols tribes
also did that. Yeah.
Yeah. I think Gurm does a pretty good job, though, of the Dothraki aren't just like some kind of crazy savages. Like as the book goes along, Daenerys learns more about them. And you learn more about the culture, and they definitely are a legitimate culture. And he goes out of his way to say, like, you know, this stuff might seem weird, but it's, like, don't turn your nose up at it.
Yeah, well, that's part of what makes Viserys seem like such a dickhead, too, because he keeps calling them savages and barbarians, and they actually have a pretty deep culture, you know, they have legends, and they have, like, their system of living comes out of a long historical background, and there is actually a little bit of a central culture, even for all these wandering tribes, because they have their central city with their elders, and they have a very... a system of... words are failing me because both of us are exhausted, I think.
We're, like, almost at an hour.
Yeah, we're about to pass out, too. They have a very clear way of life, I guess, which is more or less what culture means. So maybe just repeating myself at this point. But, yeah, that's what you do. You wander, you have horses, you take what you want, and, you know, you try to be a manly man or a womanly woman.
It is kind of messed up, though, that, like, multiple people have to die at your wedding for it to be a success.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, I guess that's where some of the... That's why it seems savage on the surface, right?
Or the, like, two... Like, one guy just grabbed a woman and just started doing her in front of everyone.
Right.
I was like, okay, that's kind of extreme.
I feel like it's a version of a joke I've heard before a little bit, the wedding thing. It's like, oh, like... You know, a Dothraki wedding isn't considered to be successful unless there's at least a death or two. And I read another book several years ago where someone described a good luau as one that ends in at least one divorce.
Oh. Kind of the same idea.
Right. Sorry. Game of Thrones!
When you play the Game of Thrones, you either win or you die.
Hey, it's the theme of the novel.
Oh, lol. I actually do think it's kind of funny that the title of the series is technically Song of Ice and Fire, but everyone just calls it Game of Thrones.
Well, I mean, as of the end of the fifth book, the only reason you would call the series Song of Ice and Fire is because that's what the series is called. Like, it wouldn't occur to me to name it that on my own. Game of Thrones seems way more appropriate. Which kind of implies that there's a lot of shit left to happen.
God. Well, I heard originally there were only supposed to be 4 books?
Hmm.
4, maybe 5. But then he was just gonna, like, do, like, a 2-year time skip. And then he started writing so many, like, flashbacks that he just wrote books 4 and 5. And so book 6 is going to be the original book 4 or some shit like that. I don't really know. I'm losing track.
It seems pretty likely that if it's the Song of Ice and Fire, there will be a lot more of the others, White Walkers and dragons.
You would think.
You would think.
But anyway.
Anywho, we digress.
Again.
Again.
For the millionth time.
Exhaustion!
But honestly, Game of Thrones is incredibly apt because it's all about getting the throne, keeping the throne, sucking up to the throne, whatever else.
Almost nothing about this book is straightforward. Daenerys' storyline is probably the most straightforward because it's point A leads to point B, leads to point C, whereas everything that happens in Westeros is just like this giant tangle.
Yeah.
And you don't know what really happened until, usually a character that you thought was too important to die dies. You're like, oh, now I get it.
Yeah, and actually Daenerys starts falling into that toward the end of the book when she's trying to save all of the women who are getting attacked and thinks she's doing this, like, here's something that I can do for them. And then the woman who, ends up doing all the magic points out, hey, you think you're helping, but you're actually not.
Right. Well, yeah, you come in behind this horde of pillagers and then you try to save people after the fact, but, like, you're with the conquerors, we're not actually going to warm up to you all that well.
Yeah. Like, you really expect me to cure your husband after all the shit he did to my people?
Right.
No.
I go, I guess that's a fair point. But I'm still going to burn you alive.
Yeah. And
then walk into the fire and emerge with dragons. That was a pretty cool scene.
Yeah.
I'm gonna throw that out there.
Breastfeeding.
I actually thought that was one of the scenes that came across more effectively in the book than it did in the show.
Yeah, and all her hair didn't burn off in this show, so I was like, what? Stupid.
Yeah, what? It's like, oh, those Targaryens really can handle fire.
Yeah. Yeah, that scene is pretty freaking awesome. But her story starts getting a lot more convoluted as she tries to get to the throne as well.
That's true, especially, later in the series.
Yeah.
Which I should really stop referencing. Let's see. So, symbols. You're stretching to come up with one. I think the throne, maybe a little bit.
Ben made the comparison that you try really hard to gain the throne, and once you do, you're actually in a probably even more dangerous position. And then the literal throne itself, when you sit on it, if you're not careful enough, it'll cut you up.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's spending all this time maneuvering to get power, and everyone who gets power suffers for it, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Or dies of it.
Mm-hmm.
And here's a throne that is actually made of swords and will actually cut you if you're not careful while you're sitting on it. Seems a little symbolic.
Yeah.
I think that was the intent of the people who forged the throne to begin with.
And if you want to, you can buy a replica on HBO for right. like $25,000. So
if anyone wants to send us one.
It's a salary for the year well spent.
It'd be a solid Christmas gift for either of us.
Just for one of us.
Never, it's never too early. That's right, and then we'll spend all our time fighting over who gets it.
We'll just both be dead by New Year.
So it's a bad gift for us if you want to see us and hear us.
If you want to hear the conclusion of our epic Bill Paxton, Sean Bean series.
Do not send us a throne.
Do not send us a throne. Do not send us a throne.
That's right, I already have this awesome one made out of books. maybe other scenes that we wanted to throw out there? I don't know. Maybe. Like, I just pick random cool things in the book and talk about them. But it seems kind of unnecessary.
Yeah, I mean, we've covered most of the big things.
Here's the relevant stuff. So the writing itself.
Yeah.
Is pretty solid. Definitely above average, I think.
Yeah, it's interesting. And, I mean, the books are so long that if the writing wasn't good, they'd just be impossible to read.
Yeah, though that doesn't stop some fantasy authors.
Yes.
And Gav's made the comment when we were talking earlier that she thought this book and the second one especially, but could use a little bit of editing, but
the plots aren't quite as strong as they could be.
Yeah, they're not quite as tight. I think that there's maybe just a little bit of the Tolkien thing, which in fantasy is not that surprising, where he over-describes sometimes. Like, every outfit that anyone ever wears is described in painstaking detail. Uh-huh. Every meal that's ever served is described down to the last three spices added to the dish.
Someone did make a Game of Thrones cookbook.
It seems like it would be pretty possible. Also, pretty tasty. Most of the food that gets described, I want to eat.
I know, me too. I'm like, I'd eat that.
Every single character that appears has a name. It's never like some knight walks in and is like, yes, sir. He always has a name, and the three retainers with him have names.
Yeah.
They have whatever their house color and the colors and banner is on them.
The character list for this series is ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, he includes an appendix with all of the characters in which houses they're connected to at the back of the book, and there are hundreds of names.
Yes.
Most of them don't actually matter that much, but you could probably pull 60 characters who have more than one line of dialogue.
Yeah.
In the first book, let alone the series.
Yeah.
So many people. And also going back to the editing idea for just a second, I think a little of that may come from, for some reason with fantasy novels, it is not only okay, but expected to some degree that it's going to be twice as long as a regular commercial novel.
An epic.
Yeah, I don't know if that's to make it epic, because it seems like so many fantasy series have multiple books.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah, you get your standard trilogies, but then you have your Game of Thrones, which is at 5 and counting, even if it was originally only going to be 4 or 5.
Uh-huh.
Or something else I read was The Wheel of Time, which I think was supposed to be, I want to say, 10, maybe supposed to be 7, and then it was supposed to be 10, and there are 12 of them out, and the 13th and actual final one is coming out late this year, early next year, except the last three had to be written by a different guy because the original author died, just leaving behind apparently 3,000 pages of notes to work off of.
I hope Gurm doesn't do that.
Yeah, I know.
Stay alive, Gurm!
Yeah, well, because I really don't think you could find someone to fill in for Gurm. Because I think the writing style is so important. Like, the way he... characterization is so good.
Uh-huh.
That I think another author would have trouble stepping in. Whereas Robert Jordan, while he did create a very interesting universe and plot line, when Brandon Sanderson started writing the series, frankly, the quality of the writing went up. And I liked the characters better when he wrote them. But, again, we were saying that the writing in Game of Thrones is above average, so...
Yeah, and again, it is long. It could use some editing, but I think overall it's still interesting and a pretty quick read for as long as it is.
Yeah, absolutely. The first time I read it, I blasted through it. I think I read it in less than a week, and it's a solid 800-page read.
Yeah. So, questions for the series?
Yeah, like, what happens with insert character name here?
Yeah, with everyone.
Everything is open-ended.
The big fandom question is, who is Jon Snow's mother? People have been debating that since book one.
I actually came up with one, and that was, what happened to poor Jane Poole?
Yeah.
First time I read the book, I assumed that they were just separating for Sansa so they could safely kill her, but reading it the second time, I actually think she's working in one of Littlefinger's whorehouses now.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's sad.
Not to go all dark on you, but...
Well, some people might think that's a worse fate, some people might think it's a better one.
Well, I'd rather be alive than dead. Probably.
Yeah.
Given the options. But yeah, putting a 12 or 13-year-old noble girl into a... Well... not quite noble girl, but the steward's daughter, someone who is raised in wealth, more or less, suddenly putting her into a whorehouse. That's a pretty
significant change.
Pretty bad turn, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, what's going to happen with Westeros?
Who's going to get the throne, man?
Who's gonna get the throne?
Aside from Joffrey.
Is Daenerys ever going to go back west? It seems like it's going to be harder now.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, will someone ever punch Joffrey in the face?
Yeah, you can only hope. You can only pray that he gets punched right in his face. What do you think, Ben?
I like it. I like it a lot. It's something that I would have gotten around to rereading sooner or later anyway. I probably would have preferred to wait a few more months and then to do it right now, but I actually have been enjoying the reread, even though it's been pretty close on the heels of the first.
Yeah, I think these books are good, and definitely worth reading if you like reading, which you probably do, but I mean, they are long, so if you don't have patience while you read, these are not the books for you. If you're not into graphic death and violence, then these books might not be for you.
Yeah, and if for some reason you really hate following multiple plot lines that are jumping around, might not be for you, because I know that not everybody is willing to commit that deeply to following a story.
But I have to say, I do appreciate a fantasy series where there are female characters.
Yep, strong female characters, A+.
Looking at you, Tolkien, and your lack of female characters. I like that a lot. I like that most of the people are gray in between. I think that's really cool that you don't just have the good guys and the bad guys. It's a nice change. So, yeah, I like it. All right. Well, what are you reading right now?
Still reading the Dresden Files. I think our last episode, I said I was getting ready to start Summer Night. I am now a large chunk of the way through Summer Night and probably would have finished it, moved on to the next book, except that Game of Thrones is too fucking long.
I forgot last week to mention this, but I've just finished listening to Inkheart in my car, actually, a book on tape, by Cornelia Funke.
You didn't listen to it on tape.
On my iPod.
I know, I can't help myself.
I don't really know how to say her last name. Funke, Funke, something.
Funke!
But she's German, so that's why I don't know. About a young girl and her father who discover that if they read a book out loud, sometimes characters will come out of those books.
Interesting.
It's pretty interesting. It's the first book in a trilogy. I don't really know how. I don't know what happened in book 2 or 3. It's good for a book lover, but I tend to think too long for the plot that happens in it. Okay. So, yeah.
Dresden Files, by the way, written by Jim Butcher.
So, that's all we have. If you want to contact us, you can get on our website and leave us a comment at www.novelideaspodcast.com.
You can use our email if you still do that.
No one sent us smut last week.
That's right. It's okay. I forgot to write it too. NovelIdeasPodcast@gmail.com.
You can follow us on Twitter @NovelIdeasPod.
Or if you are one of our iTunes listeners, you can leave reviews and comments there. And I would encourage you to do so if you haven't. Or even if you have, leave one for every episode.
Yeah. That's how good
it
is.
That's right. 2 thumbs up, even though they don't even use that system. Leave us 2 thumbs up.
Somehow. Magic. But. So, yeah, and we'd love to hear anything you guys have to say about Game of Thrones or 50 Shades of Grey, if you have any lingering thoughts on that book.
You just want to tell us how...
Game of Thrones way better than 50 Shades of Grey.
Yes. Yeah, we could do a whole podcast devoted to that, actually. I would talk for an hour about how... Just an hour of listing things that are better than 50 Shades of Grey. I forgot what the other thing was I was going to say. That's right. So next week, we will be reading Jurassic Park.
By Michael Crichton.
Which
is a bestseller, but like 20 years ago.
A bestseller from the past. We pulled book DNA out of a book mosquito.
And recreated it.
No, we actually have other reasons for doing that too. Next week, possibly with a special guest.
Maybe. We'll see.
And I guess that's all for this time.
Yeah. So
we'll see you next week.
Bye.